His topic is Out of the Garden, Sin Enters the World. Eric?
Tim asked if this was a good time. You're at Maywood. And I'm like, man, anytime I can leave camp, I'm in. And then I don't have to try to explain to the elders. I really don't have to explain to elders much. So, hey, I'm going to be at camp on Wednesday. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to be speaking at Great Oaks on Wednesday too. But you're already going to have somebody to fill for me anyway. So it works out. Last week I was in Omaha. My oldest son was playing in a tournament there in Omaha and was blessed to be able to, I don't want any booze, just go with me. So I was blessed to be able to go watch the Bulldogs that Saturday win their first game there in the College World Series. Traveled all day on Sunday and made our way to Maywood there in Hamilton, Alabama. And then my youngest one, Cam, wanted to stay at camp also. He's seven, so he gets to sleep in the bunk with me. That's horrible. And so then today I had to finish some stuff up. I left camp this morning and had to finish some stuff up with the city today. And I'm just kind of, you know, just taking my time, all this and that. Next thing I know, I look at it was 4:33. And I was like, I think I was supposed to leave way before. And it said estimated time arrival was 6:59. And so I called Tim and I said, look, buddy, I'm rolling. My mother-in-law when she passed, my wife's grandmother when she passed away at Christmas, she sold me her Mercury Grand Marquis. Of course, my oldest was not a big fan of this decision of mine. And so I bought the car. So that Grand Marquis hit a speed limit tonight that it's never hit before. I do apologize for that sin, so I'm sorry about that. It is known as the liminal space. Sometimes it is referred to as the in-between. You know, we have our home, and you have your work, and that's where you travel. Or maybe you have home and you have school. And maybe then from school you have a ball. Or some extracurricular activity. And then after work, you go out to the barn or you go out to work. And you have these big events that take place in our life. And it's at those events that I feel like that a lot of us, that's where we connect the most with our family. That's where we connect with our friends. That's where we connect even with God. And that's where we have big, big moments with God. We've got 300 people over at Maywood right now, and that's that big event that takes place, and a lot of people's lives are being changed. Now, here, right, or do we have a group? Do y'all have a group at camp too or somewhere? All right, so they're in an event right now that is where they're going to be able to connect with God, and they're going to come back, and they're going to be fired up, and they're going to be excited, and I think that it is, I meant to do that earlier, and I think it is, what is left out is what takes place in between these things that is called the liminal space, or what you want to call the in-between space. It's in these places where I think we sometimes miss the opportunity to have the biggest effect, and where I think God uses really the in-between places in the big events to do some of the most powerful work that we see not only in Scripture, but you can see throughout our ministry, through our life. It is that in-between place of where I'm outside shooting basketball with my dad, and my dad takes that opportunity. It is when Christ notices there's a large crowd just sitting there. He has compassion on them, and it's in that journey is whenever he feeds them. And in that moment, he's not only teaching the crowd of people that he has compassion on, that, hey, you know, I'm the Son of God, and I've got this ability and this power thanks to God and who I am, and I'm here to provide for you. He's also taken this in-between moment between two big things, travel of where he's going, to teach his disciples that, hey, you've got to believe that I can provide for the people that we see in front of us. You've got to trust that, hey, I can take care of this. So he uses these opportunities in between the two places to do some of the biggest things in our life. We see it on the road to Damascus in Acts chapter 9. Paul, as he is traveling to take care of some extreme business in Damascus, and it's in that in-between place where God does the biggest work in somebody's life. He shows him light. He shows him Christ, and he says, listen, I'm going to blind you for a little while, and we're going to have somebody carry you and lead you. And it's in those big places that I want to encourage you to do the biggest work. And you're sitting there going, I thought your topic was sin. Okay, it is, and we'll get to it in a minute. So that is called Tom's Table. Let me tell you a little bit about Tom. Tom is an 87-year-old Marine who is an elder there at Aberdeen Church of Christ. So we had this great idea to let's renovate our house. Horrible idea. So we spent 6 months with Tom Allman, who owns what's called Allman Printing there in Aberdeen. We lived 6 months with him. And you see that little paper towel? That's his spot. He didn't use a plate. And that's where he sat. And every morning and every evening when we came home from our two big places, it was usually the ball field, when we came home, Tom is always sitting there. When I woke up in the morning, Tom is always sitting right there. And I always sat right there on the other side by the refrigerator. I'll give you the reason for that in a minute. But I would always sit right there on that side. And every time I woke up in the morning and every time I would come in and go to bed, there's some things that I learned about Tom. The first thing I learned about Tom is that he is a Marine. And he's still a little rough around the edges. I'm not going to tell you much about it. It's between me and Tom. I always called it Tom's Little Fortune Cookies that I can't share with anybody because he's a Marine and an elder. And I don't want anybody to think anything bad about him. And you already are. But as he's telling me these little stories or these little words of advice, the words of wisdom in marriage and in life and raising kids, every single time he had that book open, the Bible, to 1 Corinthians. He teaches the adult class. And I would always sit there and he'd say, well, Derek, tell me what your thought is. I'm like, Tom, don't ask me. You already know. Why are you asking me? You know the answer. I just want to know what you think. I was like, well, it hadn't changed. I'm not going to change it. But anyway, we would have some amazing conversations. And every morning and every night, he had his notes and he was written. It was after Christmas, he got sick. And he spent about a week or so in the hospital. He gets out of the hospital and, man, he's back at work, back at church. He's kicking it. He's doing well. And then he gets sick again. Well, he gets back in the hospital. And so I went to go visit him, and I went off and spent a weekend with Leslie. And he's like, man, I'll go have fun. Just go. Just enjoy the weekend. You don't even have to preach on Sunday. You just go and enjoy. And I get a phone call coming back that he passed away. Now, it was crazy because Tom, like 10 minutes before he passed away, I've got to tell you this story because this is just, it is extremely inappropriate. And you may not ask me back. But he gets up and he stands up on the side of the bed. He said, Ernie's one of his boys, I got to use the bathroom. Men stand up to use the bathroom. And I'm a man. He uses the bathroom. He sits back down. Of course, he's made a mess. And he begins to eat some of the potatoes and carrots, and nurses started to run in. Mr. Tom, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm good. Everything's great. He lays down, and within 5 seconds, he's gone. And so you're like, why did you tell that story? I tell that story because when I think about that, I think about that chair, that spot, I think about the Bible open, I think about the hours of conversation we had. He's good. He was ready to go. And he used the in-between places to make sure that Derek be ready. He did not share this with me at work. We did not talk about it at certain, you know, at these big events, at ball games. He would come and see our boys play. He didn't come and say that. No, he used at the, when we would be in at 10:30 at night and the kids are getting ready to bed, I'm sitting there. It's at that moment he begins to use the in-between place, this threshold that some psychologists say, that say, hey, this is the moment in which I'm going to change your life. And this is the moment that I think that we sometimes forget. So I want us to look at two in-between moments in Scripture that I think is huge. The first one comes from Genesis chapter 3. And we'll look at that. Yeah, while y'all are turning to that, I remember the first time I spoke here since I was when I started the pulpit work, or the ministry, or whatever preachers call it. And Tim said, we want you to come and speak. I said, yeah. Of course, my mind has youth. So what it's been for 17 years. And when I got here, my first lesson was all geared towards, you know, and then they all left. And I'm sitting there going, does this mean I'm like, I got to be an adult now. And I remember Tom saying, Derek, you just be who you are. Just be who you are. People will like it and people won't like it. Just don't worry about it. Verse 1, now the serpent was more craftily than any other beast of the field that the Lord had, that Lord God had made. He said to the woman, did God actually say you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden. Neither shall you touch it, lest you die. But the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight in the eyes, that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. I want you to think about this. They are in what I think is in this in-between moment of where they're just walking through the garden that God has provided. Void and chaos was at the extreme beginning. God, and in the most beautiful way, makes it into this tranquil, calm, and peaceful lifestyle. He plants a garden. And now it is not void in chaos. Now it's not just in darkness. Now it is what has really been trying to get back to where it all is. In this relationship with God, He is now in their midst. He's walking with them. He's in the garden. And all these things are taking place. And then the devil creeps in. And it's in this in-between place, verse 7 stands out, because we're going to briefly mention it here, but it's going to be our main thing towards the end. Then the eyes of both were open, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloth. I want us to see that in that aspect, that their eyes were open. It is something more than just the fact that, hey, they saw each other naked. It is something that took place that changed everything from here on out. It is something that changed the way that God is seen. For so long, they saw God in reality. They saw God as light, and there was nothing there to distract them from seeing God and who He was. Picture that for a minute. Picture seeing God as who He is and being able to walk with Him. And then as soon as sin entered into the world, their eyes were open, or what I would like to call their eyes were shut, or eyes wide shut. They no longer were able to see God in its reality. They were never able to see God in its true form. They had trouble seeing God in the light in which He was showing, because this one thing entered in. And it's been like that for ever since. In Romans chapter 8, starting verse 5, I'll read it. For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. For to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. And those who are in the flesh cannot please God. But you, however, are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit. If in fact the Spirit of God dwells in you, anyone who does not have the Spirit of Christ does not belong to Him. It's the carnal mind of the flesh that begins to darken the picture of God. And it happened in the in-between place. It happened in just walking in the garden and enjoying what God had created, and it was in between that. And from the garden to the resurrection of Christ, there has been this whole plan of trying to reverse this curse that took place in the garden. And I think it's really neat. I think it's really beautiful of how that curse was reversed. And so in order for us to see that, we have to look at Luke chapter 24. So let's go to Luke 24. We know the story. Two guys were just been to Jerusalem. They had heard about the crucifixion of Christ, the prophet, the one in which they have put all their trust in. And now they're going back to Emmaus. But this wasn't two guys that were being quiet. These were men who were talking about it on the road going to Emmaus. And man, they're just, man, you know, Mary saw the empty tomb and, you know, an angel spoke to her and all of a sudden, but what are we to take of this? You know, we hadn't seen anything, you know, and we, you know, where is he? And they're discussing all these things about what has just taken place and a stranger comes by. Doesn't make himself known yet, but a stranger comes by and begins, hey, what's going on? Are you crazy? Are you living under a rock? What's going on? Just paraphrasing this. And when he began to speak, look at verse 28. So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he was going farther. But they urged him strongly, saying, stay with us. Begin to see what some call this first, well, not the first, but you begin to see what it's called, this table fellowship. For it is toward evening and the day is now far spent. So he went in to stay with them. This table of fellowship was extended. All right, here we go. How many of you still eat at a dining room table? Let's be honest here. Raise your hand if you still eat at a dining room table. All right. Everything took place in a dining room table. Everything. And I'm going to share some stuff in a minute. But these two guys extended a hand, an invitation, a table of fellowship, saying, listen, we want you, a stranger, to come into our home and let's talk about this. And so he comes in, and what takes place is exactly what takes place in Matthew chapter 26, in verse 26, in the way Christ describes his death and what's fixing to take place. He uses these in-between moments to talk about humongous things gathered around a table. It says, so he took the bread, he blessed it, he broke it, and he gave it. That's Matthew chapter 26. So he enters into this home and where he was invited, and they gather around a table. And listen to this. Verse 30, and when he was at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed it, and he broke it, and he gave it to them. Now remember, we're trying to figure out how is this curse that took place in the garden reversed? How is it taken care of? So many believe that this is the text that it takes place in. This is when the reverse of the sin that took place in the garden in Genesis chapter 3. So many believe that what took place on the road to Emmaus is what actually just broke open this thing of where you're going to be able to see God exactly who He is. I want you to look at what it's like, this table of fellowship here. The first word that you see here is blessing. And I've got to show you this. You're not going to be able to see it. This could have been another PowerPoint. But if you were to take my phone and open it, you're going to see something. Can anybody see what it is from here? It's black. A shrimp. No, I don't have a picture of my kids or my beautiful wife. I don't have a picture of me standing by my kids there at the Cardinals game the other day or at Omaha, nothing like that. I've got food on my phone. This is what I look at whenever you think about here's Christ coming to the table. This is a blessing. You know how many taste buds you have in your mouth? 10,000. I don't think God offers food just to fill you up. I don't. Is anybody with me on this? I mean, I love food. Who loves food? All right, I'm like to an extreme on this thing. I was able to go to Vicksburg. Man, I fell in love with Vicksburg, Mississippi. I'm from the Delta, but I don't ever remember remembered Vicksburg. But now since I have this passion for food, I went to Vicksburg and I'm going to the restaurants, and I was able to, my youngest Kim is sitting beside me, and we're sitting there, and this girl from California, all she's doing is touring. She was 25, 26 years old, and we're at this bed and breakfast, and my wife had to go work, and there's about six or seven of us around this table, and we're sitting there, and I'm beginning to just carry on this conversation with this girl from California. She was Asian. She was just an exchange student, and man, she just began to talk. And I'm sitting there going, "This is crazy," because normally they want people from Mississippi to talk. And I'm sitting there, and it was the first time that where I was like, "You know what? My food is not the most important part here." I was able to. It's this connection. That's what a table does. It connects you with people. I end up running, there she was, and right here was this couple, and they were from France, and he had on a Delta Blues shirt. Man, I started talking. I can tell you all about the Blues, where to go in the Delta, where you need to stay away from, where you need to go. And man, we just started rolling. And then whenever he started to talk back, he spoke in French. And I'm like, I just wasted 20 minutes. This guy has no clue. But I do believe that whenever we take this opportunity to connect in the table that we have and to be able to connect in this way, you don't just look at it in the sense of, hey, this is a feeling, I'm full now. And this is the way a lot of diets are now. You only eat to, you know, just to, you know, survive, only what you need, all of that. I do believe that God created these things in order for you to enjoy the taste of the food, but also when you sit down and enjoy the meal, make sure there's somebody else there to connect with. And that when you give thanks to God, you're giving thanks to the provision that is given there. If you go into the holy room, there are 12 pieces of manna there, and each one of those is there to represent to the tribes, hey, this is how God has provided. It's set there on a table with a lamp right beside it so that you can see the bread, you can see the body of Christ, you can see what's taking place. And we've got to use the table a lot more than what we do to be able to connect and bless and give thanks to God for the people that are sitting across from us and for the food that He has given us right here. Because God used these in-between places to bless us and for us to give thanks and bless Him back. And I see this through this Hebrew prayer that says, "Blessed are you, O King, King of the universe, for you give us food to sustain our lives and make our hearts glad." The next one is what is called brokenness. It's when you're breaking. He blessed it, he broke it. It's when one comes real before God. So I told you I was going to tell you one of these stories about what happens at the table. And I can't remember. I get confused sometimes where I talk to them. But anyway. So I'm at the dining room table, and I had come down with a cold, and Dad had accused me of stealing his credit card. Side note, my sister did it. But that's another story. And so as I had this cold, I had to lean again. It wasn't that table, obviously, but it was the table there in Greenwood. Had to lean up, you know, like you're being arrested. And Dad, he hit me. He hits me three times. That's it. Mom does four. Like, Mom doesn't have a number. Dad has three, always. And man, when he came across with Miss Bertha, that's the name of our wooden paddle, everything that was in my nasal cavity, whoop! And it was the only time my dad ever only spanked me once, because he could not stop laughing. But I was broken, if you know what I'm talking about. Completely broken. I love this story here in John chapter 18 and John chapter 21, because you see the story of Peter broken, and it's how Christ used the in-between places to break him down. In John chapter 18, and you can, if you want to, you can go there. This is one of the most difficult times, I guess, in Peter's life. Starting verse 15, Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. And since the disciples was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. But Peter stood outside at the door. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watch at the door and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of the man's disciples, are you?" And he said, I'm not. Now the servants and the officers had made a charcoal fire, because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. And Peter also was with them, standing and warming themselves. High priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teachings. And Jesus answered him, "I've spoken openly to the world, and I've always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. I've said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I've said to them. They know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" And Jesus answered him, If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me?" Aeneas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And then listen to verse 25 through 27. "Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, and they said to him, 'You also are not one of the disciples, are you?' And he denied it and said, 'I am not.' One of the servants of the high priest and relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off asked, 'Did I not see you in the garden with him?' And Peter denied it, and the rooster crowed once again. Once again, in the in-between place, Satan enters in into two moments here. But in John chapter 21, I love the way that Christ enters into the in-between place. Now, you remember the scene? Charcoal, nice little warm fire. They're all cozy together around it. "Are you the one that..." "Nah, I'm not him. No, I'm not him. I'm just trying to stay warm, you know." So Peter and the disciples are fishing. And Christ is out on the shore, 100 yards away. And he's got him a nice little charcoal fire, right? He's cooking. You can call at the table if you want. Peter notices it is him, puts on his clothes because he had his shirt off. It's a no-no. But he put his clothes back on, jumps into the water, goes after him, gets over there, leaves the disciples with all the fish, 150-something. They've got to do all the work. And he sits there and Christ says, listen, you know, just bring your fish. We can sit around here and we can... I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but it's in John 20. Just look at it. And we just gather around this charcoal fire, this little pit, this little table I've got here, and let's eat and let's talk. You remember that conversation? I hope so. It's the actual lesson that I had to give here last year. John chapter 18, a charcoal and a fire is used for him to deny Christ, and Christ says, you know what, I'm going to set this up pretty good. I'm going to bring a little charcoal and fire. This time I'm going to put some fish on there. And some bread. And I'm going to ask him a question. Can anybody remember that question? Do you love me, Peter? And we're not going to go over that again. You can just get the tape and rewind it and watch it. But he says, I do. And just shortly, he said, then go feed my sheep. You think he was broken? A lot of people think that when Christ turned around and he looked at him, you remember that moment when Christ and he denied him and he looked at him? So often we think it's the same type of stare and look that we give people after they have, you know, done something to us. How dare you? I knew you were going to do it. Not Christ. I don't think he did. Some scholar, some commentator said it is a look of compassion because he knew how Peter was going to feel. He knew how... Peter's the one that jumps the boat and tries to walk on water. Peter's the one that stands and cuts off Max's ear. He's the one that shows his faith as big as one can show it. And at the moment of the denial, Christ looks and he stares at him, but not of this stare of like, what's wrong with you? It's like, Peter, I hope you're going to be okay. And then when he comes back to reveal himself, he gathers this charcoal and this fire and he builds it and he puts some fish on it. He sits them down at a table and he uses the in-between, the liminal space. He uses the time to say, hey, let's talk about this again. How much do you love me? I love you. Then I want you to go feed my sheep. Now, for somebody like me, I take that literal. I'm going to put a little garlic and some herbs on the fish, and we're going to go and feed some people. But that's one of the most beautiful passages that we see of brokenness. Then we get to giving. I believe the table has the most missionary power here on earth. Why do you say that? I say that because of a guy by the name of Mark. And not Mark in the gospel. Mark, he's 6'6", 340, 50 pounds. He was sitting, if you were to take that table and put it in Greenwood, he is sitting where I sat by the refrigerator. My parents are all about us having parties. Sure, you can have a party. You just got to be over at my house. And so we got to rotate every other year. This year, it was my sister's time to have a party. And at that party, there were 80 people at the house. No, we're not millionaires. No, we do not have a mansion. We just had a normal old-sized house with 80 people. It was about midnight. It was time for everybody to leave. My dad said, guys, it's time to go. Everybody left. Except for one guy. He was 6'6", 340-something pounds, and he sat at that table. But my dad noticed him. My dad always makes chili for this party, and he didn't touch a bowl of chili. He asked Mark, Mark, we didn't know who he was. Let me put that. We had no clue who this cat was. And so he just said, you know, I asked him who his name was, and he said, Mark, look, would you want some chili? Make a long story short, he did. He ate 6 bowls of chili. He ended up staying the night. Make a long story short, he lived with us for 2 years through my high school year. Wasn't a member of the church, ended up becoming a member of the church, went to Fried Hardeman University, spent about 20 years there trying to graduate, never did. But I know this, if it wasn't for a bowl of chili and a table, and my dad using his many years of mission, I mean, he grew up in the Catholic Church, he was an Italian, and a tax collector, mix those three together. Then became a deacon of the church and an elder, worked for the IRS for 35 years. Now he's a preacher of the gospel, now for about 7 or 8 years. He used the table for everything. And it was for mission also. Chris now lives in San Antonio. Mark, his wife is Chris, but Mark now lives in San Antonio with Chris. And it's a beautiful story of a way to bless it, to see a brokenness that takes place, and to see a way to use as a mission field. And so when you go back to Luke chapter 24, I want you to see this. So many call this the reversal curse of Genesis 3 because of what takes place next. In verse 30, when he was at the table with them, he took the bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. And what happens? And their eyes were opened. They have been shut since the garden. If he did not reveal himself on the road to Emmaus and did not eventually reveal himself to the disciples that are about to take place, what happens to Christianity and the faith? Man, it shuts it down. I mean, it goes, they're still living in the garden. But when sin entered into this world, when disobedience entered into the world, it takes an obedience to bring it back. And when their eyes were open in the garden to sin, when they sat at a table and he blessed it, and he broke it, and he gave it to them, and they took it together with him, the eyes were open, and they were able to see that they hadn't seen from the garden. God in its reality. God in its light. So I ask you this. If the power of the in-between place can be seen in the scripture with 5,000 people or with Saul and the transformation to Paul on the road to Damascus. If you can see the in-between place and a fire pit with fish and a question being asked by God, by Christ, saying, listen, do you love me? If you can see the power of a table that's in your living room, can change a man who is 6'6", who's living in his car because his daddy didn't want him and his mama couldn't afford him. And it changed his life so much that I got to tell you this. Dad says, you're not able to come and stay at my house. No, you're not able to eat our Sunday meal unless you come to church with us. 6'6 guy doesn't miss a meal. So he came to church with us. If somebody tells me that there's not power in food, in fellowship, in this table fellowship that is there, then there's something wrong with you. So my question is this for you tonight. When's the last time you've invited somebody? And you invite them not so that you can taste the shrimp tacos that you made with some broccoli slaw, casserole on top of it. I did the other day. It was absolutely amazing. But it's not because you want them to do that. It's because you know that the people you invite are walking in the garden. They're sinners. There are people who have a carnal mind and a disobedient heart. And when's the last time you invited them? I close by asking this question. Why did God make you? You don't have to answer it out loud. I mean, because I don't. But you got to ask yourself, why did God make you? Rick Warren wrote a book, What on Earth Am I Here For? Did anybody read that book? Oops. I don't know if he quite answered it. Well, I mean, why would God write? I mean, why would God create me? And there's something that this is just one of the things, and there's something, and this happens with my three boys. And when I think about this, if there's so much evil in the world that takes place in the garden that absolutely took place, if there's carnal things that happen in the world, and there's death that happens in the world, and there are people who are disobedient to the Word and to God. What is it that God has that he can offer that's better than what the world has to offer, or what is that, what's that good? Maybe we'll look at it like this. Why do you want to invite somebody over? And I can't help but to think of it like this. Does anybody like that feeling of love? I love it. I mean, I love when my mom would wake me up in the morning singing this horrible song. Horrible song. And then say, "Wake up, my little preacher man." I told myself from then I will never be a preacher. I said it. I'm not doing it. And that's why I do not call myself a preacher. But I love it. Every time my dad would spank me 3 times, you know what my dad would always do? He would rub my rear end. He did. He would spank 3 times, and he would rub, and he would hug me. My mom didn't, but my dad did. You know what I do with my boys, my 13-year-old and my 11, 7? I hurdle. I mean, I just straddle them, and I kiss them. I kiss them. You're like, what's your point? I think God, one of the reasons God puts us here is that I think he wants us to feel loved. I really do. Because he loved the world so much, he gave his son. He wants us to love him. And not only that, he wants you to love your neighbors. Here's the big thing. If you have trouble loving your neighbors, then you have a problem with loving who? God. If you have a problem with two, then go back to number one. I think that we invite people to our table so that we can love them. You're sitting there going, oh man, this is, no. I don't know what else. Because there are a lot of people who are alone. There are a lot of people who sit at a table by himself. Mr. Tom's wife passed away about 7 years ago. He's been sitting at that table for 7 years all by himself. Why do you think he was up at 11 o'clock waiting on us? He wanted to talk. He wanted to feel that love. He wanted to feel appreciated. I wanted to feel it. And I think that is exactly what needs to take place. Whenever we look at this and whenever we see this picture of sin in the garden, don't stay on that. Don't harp on that so much. Yes, it's there. We know it. We've got to make sure people stay out of it. But say, hey, our eyes can be open because of the way that we bless and the way that we break and the way that we give to people and the way that we invite people at the table. Make sure you're inviting people. But I close with this. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 20 says, listen, I stand at the door and knock. He's there and ready. You have to do what? Invite. Are you inviting God at your table? If you're not, use this opportunity to be the one that makes sure that you're using the time. If you're not the one using your time, the in-between, the liminal space, if you're not using that time to show love and invite people at your table, then get it right and get it right now. If we can help you, come right now while we stand and sing.